Well, good morning, everybody. Thanks for coming. My name is Wendy Auslander, and this is my colleague Tanya Edmond, and we're going to be presenting together on our talk entitled Types of Childhood Abuse and Risk for Interpersonal Violence Among Adolescent Females. I am a professor at the School of Social Work at Washington University in St. Louis, and we have been doing a study on trauma treatment for girls involved in the child welfare system in order to prevent future interpersonal violence as victims or as perpetrators. I've been there for 26 years, and my broad area is in health promotion and prevention and related to HIV, diabetes, and now related to risk behaviors of girls in child welfare. And I'm going to let Tanya start this talk, and she'll tell you a little bit about herself and her expertise, and then we'll continue. Thanks.
Dr. Auslander, are there only two of you speaking, or three?
There's two.
Two of us?
Good.
We'll have time.
Okay.
Oh, no. There's three presentations today.
Okay. Okay. So my name is Tanya Edmond, as Wendy said, and I'm an associate professor at the George Warren Brown School of Social Work at Washington University in St. Louis, and I've had the pleasure of serving as the co-investigator on this study with Dr. Auslander. My area of focus is violence against women, in particular interested in effective treatments for trauma, so this has been an exciting project to be involved in. I want to acknowledge some of the contributors to this presentation that aren't here with us. One of our doctoral students, Sarah Myers, who's been terrific, and Jerry Dunn, who's the executive director of the Children's Advocacy Center, and as you'll see in a slide in a moment, that's our primary partner in this project. They're actually the site where we're implementing the intervention, and one of their therapists is implementing it, implementing the intervention with a member of our research team. We're supposed to tell you that we have no relationships to disclose, so we've told you that. This is a CDC-funded study. It's a five-year study. We're in year four. This is funded through the Brown Center for Violence and Injury Prevention at our school. And as I mentioned, it's in partnership with our Children's Advocacy Center. And our purpose in this talk today, the aims of this presentation, are to understand the pathways by which child abuse influences victimization and perpetration among adolescent girls in child welfare, and to determine the role of PTSD in the relationship between child abuse and victimization and perpetration, as Wendy mentioned. When you look at the empirical literature and the consequences of childhood maltreatment and trauma, we see substantial difficulties, particularly in the areas of mental health, behavioral difficulties, and interpersonal difficulties. In terms of mental health, those most commonly identified are depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, and suicidal ideation. Some of the behavioral difficulties that are often identified are sexual risk behaviors, delinquency, substance and alcohol use. And interpersonal difficulties, part of the consequences that we're most concerned about in this study is risk for revictimization or perpetration, and we see that empirically in the literature being connected to bullying, intimate partner violence, sexual abuse or sexual assault, and child maltreatment, in both in terms of revictimization and perpetration. We're often asked why we're looking at girls instead of boys or both, and the reasons for this for us are that girls are much more likely to experience multiple types of childhood maltreatment and are more vulnerable to risks for revictimization, both physical and sexual revictimization, in both adolescence and in their adulthood. Girls are also more vulnerable to depression and PTSD than are boys, and untreated PTSD has been correlated with increased risk for revictimization. There's a substantial amount of evidence that shows that adult women who've experienced interpersonal violence have histories of childhood maltreatment and other types of trauma. So that's why we decided it was important to focus on girls. There are a number of theories that have been talked about connecting trauma to issues of aggression in both in terms of victimization and perpetration. Social learning theory is a popular one, and it's certainly one that we keep in mind. But we wanted to focus specifically on, for this analysis, on attachment theory for a number of reasons. And so when we look at attachment, good attachment is meant to provide a sense of security, and it's seen as an essential mechanism for survival in human beings. It plays a central role in the development of affect regulation. And one of the things that makes this particularly important is that when children experience traumatic events, particularly in terms of childhood maltreatment, it leads to attachment disruptions. And so instead of having a secure attachment, the children are much more likely to have insecure attachment in the form of anxious ambivalent attachments, anxious avoidant attachments, or disoriented, disorganized attachment patterns. We also see what happens with that is difficulty with affect regulation. So secure attachment leads to healthy emotional regulation development. Insecure attachment leads to difficulties with affect regulation. We also see that correlated with difficulties in relationships with peers, with future partners, and with future children. And because of those connections, it's where attachment theory has been seen as an important theory for understanding the potential explanations for intergenerational violence, intergenerational child abuse, and also for being seen as explaining potential links in terms of prior trauma histories and interpersonal violence in the future. One of the other things that is important about this theory is that with an impact on your affect regulation system can increase your vulnerability to the development of post-traumatic stress disorder. So that's why we see attachment as an important theory for this particular model. The research questions that we're going to be answering today are: what are the associations of types of childhood abuse and current aggressive behaviors among adolescent girls involved in the child welfare system? And does PTSD mediate the relationship between childhood abuse and aggressive behaviors in this population? To give you a little bit of information about the girls in our study, we have 136 girls with an average age of about 15. They're just under 15, ranging from 12 to 18 years old. As Wendy mentioned, this is a randomized controlled trial of a trauma treatment. It's a trauma-focused cognitive behavioral group intervention. And so we have usual care, all the services that girls in the child welfare system would normally have access to, and then we have our experimental treatment. When you look at the ethnic breakdown of our girls, the majority of them are African American, 63%, with 20% being biracial, and only 14% being white, and 3% being either Hispanic or Asian. One of the inclusion criteria for the study was that the children had some level of engagement, some level of involvement with the child welfare system. In terms of our procedures, our baseline data was collected in face-to-face interviews. This generally is taking about an hour and a half to complete the interviews. They're being conducted by our master's level social work students who have been trained to work with this population. It's very sensitive data that we're collecting. And the data that we're presenting today has been collected from both the girls in the experimental and the usual care conditions. As an incentive for participation, each of the participants receives a $20 gift card for participating in each of the interviews. This is a study that's been has received IRB approval from our university, from the University of Missouri in St. Louis, which is where our Children's Advocacy Center is located, and with the Missouri's Children Division. Because of the sensitive nature of the information we're collecting, we also obtained a certificate of confidentiality from the CDC. The variables that we were particularly interested in this study have to do with types of abuse experienced, emotional, physical, or sexual, and that's been captured through the childhood trauma questionnaire. As we mentioned earlier, PTSD is a central variable of concern, so we use the child PTSD symptom scale developed by Edna Foa. We used a CDC multi-site violence prevention project measure for aggression, both in terms of victimization and perpetration. And we have a number of control variables that we felt were important to examine: age, ethnicity, current living situation, home instability, which really means the number of placements in the past year or across the lifetime, and number of mental health medications. These were measured at pretest, post-test, and a six-month follow-up. And our goal is to reduce trauma symptoms, specifically PTSD, as a mechanism for reducing risks for re-victimization or perpetration of aggression. One of the things that's particularly important in these control variables is home instability, and again, this relates to attachment issues. When children have more moves, that has more of a disruptive impact on their attachment abilities, their attachment styles. In terms of data analysis, we're using descriptive analyses as well as identifying significant correlations on a bivariate level between the independent variables, the mediators, and the dependent variables to see if the results are meeting the necessary conditions for a mediating effect. We also looked at what potential covariates there might be that needed to be used as control variables, and then used a follow-up bootstrapping procedure to test the significance of the mediating effect. Bootstrapping is a non-parametric resampling procedure that uses a SAS macro. It's an estimate of confidence intervals for the indirect effect in each resampled data set as calculated from the sampling distribution. And in our analysis, we had 5,000 bootstrap resamples that were used to generate a 95% confidence interval for indirect effects. That's kind of a mouthful.
Well said, though.
There's a reason I wrote it down. We wanted to give you a sense of what our girls have experienced across their short lives, and you'll see a substantial amount of types of traumas that they've experienced. And I think right now they've averaged about 6 different types of trauma, which is really substantial. And you look at the A study and the estimates of how much impact traumas have on future health problems, including shortening your life by, I think, 20 years. We have a lot to be concerned about for the well-being of these girls. We have some things highlighted in yellow, separated from parents, seeing someone in your family being hit, punched, or kicked at home, having an adult or someone older touch your private sexual body parts, being hit, punched, or kicked at home. You see that there are really high prevalence rates for each of those. And there are forms of interpersonal violence, which again has an impact on that attachment issues that we were talking about. Within the experimental conditions, one of the things that's been interesting is that the girls get to select the trauma that's been most upsetting, most distressing to them, that seems most connected to their PTSD symptoms. And separation from their parent has been one of the primary areas that they want to address, which again speaks to this issue of attachment. When we look at the results of the descriptive analyses, what we see is that these girls have experienced a moderate level of emotional abuse and moderate to severe levels of physical abuse and severe levels of sexual abuse. They have met the threshold for meeting criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder. And in terms of their experiences of victimization, they're experiencing victimization about 2 to 3 times per week, and we measured that over a 3-month time period. And they're also experiencing engaging in perpetrator behavior 2 to 3 times a week. And when we look at this data compared to another sample of kids their age, these numbers are actually a little bit lower. They're pretty similar, but a little bit lower. So we think it's a pretty accurate assessment of their victimization and perpetration experiences. So at this point, I'm going to turn the rest of the analysis over to Dr. Offlander.
Okay, thanks, Tanya. Tanya mentioned, our first step was to look at the bivariate correlations between our variables to see if they meet the conditions for testing a mediator effect. And if you take a look here, the first thing to take a look at is across here, we have emotional abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, to see if those independent variables are associated with our victimization and perpetration. And you can see across the victimization, all types of abuse were significantly associated with victimization in these girls, with emotional abuse standing out as being the strongest relationship. And then when we look at the perpetrating variable, interestingly enough, again, emotional abuse is the strongest. And there was no association between physical abuse and sexual abuse and perpetrating against others, which we found interesting, especially the physical abuse variable. But remember, these are girls, so it may be a little different in girls. We don't know. The second point here is that PTSD, our potential mediator, was associated to all the variables. So then next we examined the control variables that Tanya mentioned earlier, some demographics, age and ethnicity, again, what we call home instability, which was the number of placements that they were in the last year and in their lifetime, and then medications that they were currently on. And our findings showed, let me go back to this, our findings showed that only the home instability variables were significantly associated to both the independent and the dependent variables, and therefore those were the ones that were used as control variables in our models, our mediating models. So this is our first mediating model. We're going to be looking over four, and they're all fairly similar, little different findings. So in this one, we're looking at the mediating effect of PTSD between emotional abuse and victimization. And as you can see here, controlling for the number of placements in the last year, as you can see, when we put PTSD in the model, the direct path between emotional abuse and victimization becomes non-significant, and as you can see by our confidence intervals, that this bootstrapping method tested the indirect effects of emotional abuse on victimization, and that was significant. So this confirms basically PTSD mediating the effects of emotional abuse on victimization. In our second model, we then turn to looking at physical abuse, and we're comparing these types of abuse. Again, controlling for home instability. Again, we find out when we put PTSD in the model, it becomes non-significant, the direct effects, yet the indirect effects show a mediating effect. Our next model, model three, was looking at sexual abuse, and that relationship and pathway to victimization. Again, we see PTSD significantly mediates this effect, and when it's in the model, the direct effect, again, becomes non-significant. So we see some similarities between those three types of abuse. Our fourth model that we tested looked at the relationships between emotional abuse and perpetration, and if you remember, there was no significant correlations between physical abuse and sexual abuse and perpetration, so we're only testing this model. And again, we see a significant mediating effect, controlling for number of placements in their lifetime. So again, this confirms the mediating effect on PTSD for perpetration from the pathway from emotional abuse. So those were our four models. And in summary, we could say that the mediating effect of PTSD was confirmed by the non-significant direct path between abuse and aggression, both victimization and perpetration, when PTSD was added to the model, and its significant indirect path of the mediator using the bootstrap test. All types of abuse PTSD mediated all types of abuse for victimization, but only emotional abuse had a mediating effect with emotional abuse and perpetration. So our conclusions are that the pathways from childhood abuse to victimization and perpetration appear slightly different. PTSD is one pathway from all types of childhood abuse to adolescent victimization. It is also a pathway from emotional abuse to perpetration. Yet we still need to understand more about the pathways between physical and sexual abuse and perpetration. And we don't know much about that from this, from these data. And our implications are such that we think that evidence-based interventions that have been shown to reduce PTSD should be tested to prevent re-victimization and perpetration among girls in the child welfare system. And more, and most importantly, we're finding that emotional abuse is a big risk factor for PTSD and a mediator, significant mediator, for victimization and perpetration for this population. And we shouldn't minimize or ignore the importance of emotional abuse in this population.
Well, and one of the things that we thought was also important to mention about this is that when you're trying to get the child welfare system involved in responding, it's very difficult to get them to take a call that's specifically about emotional abuse. So in the absence of physical or sexual abuse, it's hard to get that system activated. And yet what we're seeing, particularly in terms of risk for perpetration, emotional abuse is really an important factor that needs to be addressed.
So thank you. GAIN is the name of our actual program that the girls are involved in. And I don't know whether we'll be taking questions now or at the end. Moderator.
We have a significant time left, so why don't we take about 5 minutes of questions,
sure.
And we'll have the next speaker.
Okay, sure.
You know, and I was thinking about the emotional, the role of emotional abuse. That is very similar to the work that we do, or I do, in intimate partner violence.
Yeah.
Emotional abuse is it's not a big deal, but it so is.
Yeah.
So this is very interesting.
There's a chronic nature to emotional abuse.
Well, and I worked in domestic violence for several years, and when you talk to battered women, and what is most hurtful to them is that someone they love, someone they care about, is able and willing to treat them in this way. It's much more distressing to them than the physical injuries. And you hear similar stories from children who are physically abused. It's that it's coming from this person they care about.
Yeah, you have to think of who is the messenger here.
Yeah.
Very clear, very nice. Question.
Thanks. In the back.
So I know that you had mentioned survey normal care that they do for social welfare systems. What exactly does that entail? I mean, are they getting counseling for these sort of things? And then also, have you guys looked at doing a study where you look back, you know, after a few years of treatment, see how they're doing still?
Well, I'll start by saying these data were the baseline data for our study, and usual care is whatever they're already getting through child welfare, through contract, other services, through children's advocacy services. It could be individual therapy, group therapy, medication, hospitalizations, all school services. So we're saying in our treatment study, we're saying, does our group trauma treatment work better than what they're usually getting? So usual care gets a whole array of services, and we're measuring it to control for.
Yeah, so we have a very lengthy questionnaire about every kind of service they could possibly be receiving. And one of the things that we're hearing pretty consistently from the girls in the experimental condition is that even though they've had an extensive array of services, there hasn't been a focus on the trauma that they've experienced. So even when they're getting counseling services, individual or group counseling, it's often not specifically addressing trauma or PTSD. So they can be, you can see they're still meeting criteria for PTSD, even though they've had years of services. So part of it is how effective are the services that they're receiving.
Yes?
Was any of the aggression perpetration against their abusers, and if so, how was that differentiated from self-defense?
That's a great question. our measure was a measure developed by people from CDC and some others. So it measured physical aggression, non-physical aggression, which was verbal aggression, really, and relational aggression. And many of the items really reflect a peer victimization questionnaire, similar to some of the bullying measures we see given in schools. So I don't think we could determine that from those items.
Is that only more third party than against the person? Specific
yeah, person? It doesn't specifically ask about that.
No, in fact, just as some examples, it's like the physical aggression has been in fights with in which someone was hit, threatened to hit another kid, threatened a teacher, threatened someone with a weapon, shoved or pushed another kid, hit or slapped another kid, thrown something at someone. So those are the most aggressive forms the most severe forms of aggression that we were measuring. And a lot of it is that kind of, putting someone down, starting a rumor, making faces, telling lies about people, sort of.
There may be some sibling or foster care kid peer aggression.
Is there a way in the next level to look at intrafamilial or intra-partnership?
You mean to follow up on these kids later on?
Yeah.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
You mean long-term follow-up?
Relationship.
Let's talk to CDC right now. We'll run
get some money.
Let's go get some money for that.
It's actually one of the things that we talked about in the beginning, and even developing the grant proposal, is the limitation of really wanting more longitudinal data about how effectively this might reduce their risk for revictimization or perpetration. So
or not?
Yeah, that's right.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
That's a great point. We have a short follow-up of 6 months, given the limitations of our funding and the limitations, the recruitment timeline. And so, sadly, we don't. I'd love to follow 250 kids for 5 more years.
I would think that CDC would have an interest in that as well. So,
uh-huh.
But, well, in particular, they're at the most vulnerable age for revictimization in terms of teen dating violence and sexual revictimization. So it would be great to be able to follow them for the next 5 or 10 years.
And suicidal ideation.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this population is
yeah.
grow a little older.
We have kids that we need to hotline in this protocol.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, the next speaker is.
Thanks very much, by the way.
You're welcome. Thank you.